I would like to welcome you all for this first session of Parenting in Anger, Walking the Ultimate Path to Peace with John Kenyon and myself, Stephanie Bachmann-Mattei. We would like to introduce ourselves. So, John, would you be willing to get started and introduce yourself a little bit?
I have been involved with NBC for about, it's getting close to 15 years now. And the focus on conflict and mediating with conflict for close to 10 years now. It's been a real interest of mine as I look back over my adult life. This focus on not just an interest in psychology was where I started, about how the communication that goes on inside of people and how to support people in a therapeutic way and the conflicts inside. And really, it's as I look back, it's getting into NBC and mediation, and just about a real fascination with how human beings can find that sense of connection where we feel we're part of the same oneness, the same family, when we're in conflict. Ever since I've started really specifically focusing on that with my colleague Ike Lassiter, just been really what I seem to care the most about is when we're in conflict, when we get into that fight, flight, and freeze that Stephanie, I love how Stephanie talks about brain science, that how do we come back to connection and how do we mediate when we're really triggered? So I guess that's how I see that application that Ike and I have been working on for the past 10 years and gone on to create your programs in different places around the world. That's the seed of it has been when we're in intensity, we're really experiencing that intensity. And in this class, it'll be focused on anger, and that's often reaction that's there in conflict, that intensity. And how do we really come back? And I found for myself, even with the well-practiced in the language of needs and the skills of communication, I'd still, when I'm in that intensity, it's very easy. That all is out the window, and I'm just reacting out of the parts of the brain Stephanie's going to talk about. Mm. The limbic system, the amygdala, the reptilian parts of the brain. And I'm really quite excited by how we're finding ways to support people to use the language and the skills that NBC talks about. To really be present, get back to presence and connection and conflict, and then mediate our way through different contexts, different aspects of conflict. So looking forward to sharing that as it applies to anger and parenting in this class. Glad you all are with us. To you, Stephanie.
Thank you, John. About me, well, first of all, I am the mother of three children, and it was when I was pregnant with my first son that I started really looking, obviously, at parenting and wanted to empower myself with good information on, you know, how to best raise a child. I was lucky enough to find, while still pregnant, La Leche League, and I came across attachment parenting and, you know, some practice, and also actually some pieces around how attachment parenting can actually support the development of the brain of an infant and a child. And it was then when my second son was about a year old that I came across an article about Marshall Rosenberg, who was invited actually at the La Leche League International Conference. And so I really got interested in what he was writing. And so I remember going to my husband and saying, we need to go and meet this guy. And for 2 years in a row, he was invited in New York City. And so we made the trip and met him. And after that, I was blessed with meeting Inbal Kashtan, who has been for many years one of the main trainers who has focused on parenting. And then I enrolled in the Peer Parent Leadership Program, which is a program that she founded and launched in 2006. And I have been involved in that program ever since. So that is a little bit of my journey. So one piece that I like sharing is that, you know, when I think back and, as I said, got started with La Leche League and all of that, I thought, and even, you know, in the beginning with NBC, I thought, okay, I will learn all these tools and all these practices and my children will be just fine. I mean, they will thrive because I will know what to do. And the more I learned from my children, the more I realized that anger is really one of those hot topics when I forget all about, you know, what I have learned about parenting and parenting with NBC. And so it has been actually several years now that in my teaching within the Peer Parent Leadership Program, I have focused quite some energy on anger because, first of all, I was noticing that in myself. And so when I was faced with my inner intensity, I would not remember to empathize, to connect, to all of that. So I wanted to understand more of it. And I also heard from the parents I was working with that it was, you know, a huge challenge. And really, I'm seeing from what I'm hearing from parents that really mediating conflicts and anger are the two most difficult aspects of parenting for many, many parents. And so that's why, you know, John and I thought of tackling particularly those two issues to possibly support parents in those difficulties while we are still learning and growing and, you know, learning from our mistakes and, trying to make more and more sense about intense and uncomfortable emotions at times. So I would like to briefly share what we would like to offer during the course in terms of each session, and then we will get started with today's topic. So for the first session, which is today, we would like to discuss a little bit how difficult it is to be with our anger and how many times after an outburst of anger we go into some self-blame or, you know, some shame and some self-judgments. And we would like to look at, you know, some of the basic understandings of how NBC looks at anger. And then I would also like to explore the emotional spiraling of difficult emotions. Starting to touch upon the concept of self-regulation. So when we are in this intensity, how can we bring ourselves back to a state of more balance and more groundedness? And also the concept of self-responsibility. And really also trying to understand that anger has also a life-serving reason for being. So it is still a life-serving energy, even if it comes out in a way that is more difficult to hold. And John will be offering two exercises today, and one is self-connection practice, and the other one is the intensity practice. And I will also be speaking a little bit about self-compassion. So for session two, we would like to also go deeper into the physiology and phenomenology of anger, how our basic view of the world and ourselves and other people, so what we call core beliefs that we might have on a semi-conscious, subconscious level, actually can fuel our anger. I would like to briefly share my understanding of how memory works and how that influences, you know, our own anger, and then share a meditation around that. And John will be offering specifically a piece on a process which is called the enemy image process. So when we are kind of having a cluster of judgments of another person. And then in session three, we would like to look more deeply into the piece of the relationship with ourselves. So when we get angry, what happens? So the self-judgments, the guilt, the shame, and tie that in again with how to bring self-compassion to ourselves. And again, a few pieces of brain science that I have found helpful in learning in order to really understand a little more how my brain works and how to have compassion when I am in a state of anger or when my children obviously are in a state of anger. Also, John will be offering a practice about mourning, a behavior that we might have had and that we regret, and celebrate what we were trying to accomplish, and then learn from what we might consider our mistakes and tie those different pieces of what we are sad about and what we were trying to meet and get to some new learning. And in session four, we would like to tackle the repair work. So when we do mess up, how do we bring some reconnection? So we will look at repair work. John will be offering some interpersonal mediation, and I will also share some other pieces on brain science, principle of interactive co-regulation, and also how to prepare for a dialogue, especially when it's kind of difficult. And the last session, we would like to go even more deeply into the healing part. And so it's like a continuation of, you know, the session three where we will look at shame and guilt. And John will be offering another practice, which is called healing and reconciliation. So that is, you know, the highlights of what we are hoping to be able to offer. And hopefully, you know, within these 5 weeks, there will be at least some pieces and some practices that will speak to your heart and that you will be drawn to implement into your daily life that will support you in your own journey with your kids and with this difficult emotion that we all experience. John, anything you would like to add?
I think so. I live with my wife and we have two children, two younger ones and an older one who's in college. So we've been through the teenage years with him and there's lots of anger that's been there. And the thing I wanted to add to what you said, Stephanie, I realize I'm particularly interested in anger recently. For a long time, I'd never resonated to that topic. I know Marshall has had a tape on anger for many, many years, which I kind of liked for the NVC part, but just the topic itself didn't seem that relevant to me. And other times that it came up in NVC context, I just wasn't particularly drawn to it. And I think that's actually because lately I've been studying a fair amount of shadow work, kind of looking at trying to be aware of things that we can't be aware of because, at least from a psychological perspective, the belief that our mind doesn't want us, some ways of seeing ourselves too scary or unacceptable to really let us be consciously aware of so we keep it out of conscious awareness. And I think anger's been that for me. My partner, I see her as getting quite angry at times, and the way she expresses that anger is often triggering for me and distressing for me sometimes. But I've been like, you get angry, but I don't really get angry, which she likes to tell me that that's not true. She tells me that I get angry just in a different way and that I'm not aware of it and the impact of it. So I've kind of been making the shift recently to this idea that maybe what I see, what I react to in her is something in me that I don't own or acknowledge or even or see very easily. And that's been actually liberating to be exploring that. So I feel like I still have a lot to explore in myself around anger. And I've had a lot of experience with it with my partner and just me being at times pretty uncomfortable with anger and trying to learn how to work with it. So I feel like I've actually had a lot of experience with it, especially lately in my kind of explorations around it. And so I'm actually very into this topic right now. But it wasn't even when we first came up with this, Stephanie. It's even been since then that I've been thinking about this a lot more. And we talk about that in the later parts of our year program, and we call internal mediation work. Maybe I'll touch on it here and there in different sessions of our class together. So that's my own relationship to this topic and to parenting and co-parenting with my partner and also with my kids. I mediate a lot with my kids. And actually, that feels like the easiest part for me is to mediate between them. I actually really enjoy it most of the time because I know what to do. In our training, we have maps. So it's how to put the language and the skills together in various ways to help remember or guide us through mediating. And so one of the maps is how to mediate for others. And in this case, between my kids and helping them hear each other and stuff. And I have this map in my head. And so it's actually not that difficult a lot of times. Sometimes I'm getting triggered and I have to, you know, do work with myself. But I want to give you all some hope. If that part's a struggle for you, I found that practice, especially with practice, that one can get a lot easier to help our kids hear each other and calm down. And I don't know, I've really just had very sweet moments doing that with my kids. So that's my sort of overview of our time together, my own personal connection to it.
Yeah, look, I feel really excited with what you just shared, John, because that's definitely something I would love to have some more strategies and a mind map of how to mediate between my children. Having two boys, I mean, there's different stages to it, but finding a way to first of all cut in, so at that right point before things get physical, because they tend to get physical very quickly, or if someone has gotten hurt, then how do I get them to do the repair work with each other afterwards as well? I've tried doing a little bit of stuff, but they don't want to talk about feelings and needs, and they say, I don't want to talk about this, Mum, and you know, and it's like, well, you don't have a choice. This is important.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I feel really excited to hear that you've got something to offer in that area. Yeah.
So, Stephanie, I think you were going to start off with some things, yes, and then I was going to chime in a little bit.
Yes. Here we go with today's class. I have posted some slides in the classrooms. No worries if you don't have the slides right now. I will, you know, talk about some of them and share some pieces that I find, you know, important for me in my own journey. Basically, I'm talking, you know, from my own experience. As I said, I have been trying to understand my own anger and supporting other parents with their difficulties with anger for quite a few years. So the first thing that I have found very helpful for me in terms of having compassion for my children when I see their reactivity and their, you know, anger, or when I encounter my own intensity and my own anger, whether it's, you know, just the surge that I see in my own body or a full-blown reaction, I want to remember that we are all trying to do our best with the resources and the knowledge that we have. So in MVC terms, I am hearing that in the principle that every behavior, every choice is an attempt to meet a need. So if I find myself raising my voice or, you know, being in this full-blown reaction, I want to remember that I'm trying to do my best, and whatever I do, it's in the service of life. So it's in really in the service of my own well-being, even if it is with a strategy that I fully see is not meeting many other needs. And this same principle I have, at least to me, it seems really the same principle, I have found in brain science. Brain scientists share that a major goal of the body-mind system is actually to regain a balance. Homeostasis is, you know, the word they use, which is lost during stressful events. So basically, when I am experiencing more stress than I can handle, I am losing my balance. Okay, so my brain is entering a different state, which is called a state of dysregulation. And so what my body-mind system is trying to do at that point is to bring my cellular system back to a sense of safety and well-being. And sometimes it does so in ways that I enjoy, and sometimes it does so in ways that I see are not as life-giving as I would like them to be, whether for me or for my children or whomever, you know, I am in relationship with. But just to remind myself that all I'm trying to do, even, you know, unconsciously, because many times we are not totally conscious of all the behaviors we choose, is trying to regain this sense of balance, of safety and well-being, which, again, in NVC terms for me means, you know, we are always trying to meet needs. That's all we are trying to do, really. And so right now, with that foundation, I would like to focus a little bit on, you know, meeting my own intensity. So when talking about anger, what I heard Marshall say and what I gathered from, you know, his books is that usually three things are going to happen. So we are upset because some of our needs are not being met, and usually we are blaming someone else for not getting what we want. And so the third piece is that usually when those two elements are present, a third one follows, which is we will most probably speak or act in ways that actually are counterproductive in trying to get those needs met, which we assessed as being unmet in the first place. So anger is basically a signal that something important is happening in us. So there is something that is really important that is not fulfilled in a way that we would enjoy. So this is the life-giving part, at least in my understanding. This is really, you know, the juice, the life in the anger. There is something important that is going on in me, in the situation I'm reacting to, that I really, really, really value. And at the same time, anger is also somehow a way in which this life force, which is not fulfilled in us, is somehow distracted by absolutistic and judgmental thinking. And so that is basically when I am thinking and telling myself that somebody is doing something that is wrong or is bad, or the person itself is bad. And so usually when I go in that direction with my thinking, then there is another piece that follows, which is the punitive thinking, so the deserve mentality. So then the person who is doing something that is wrong, and therefore I am angry about that, deserves some punishment. So this is part of what happens in our mind when we experience anger. And I would like to focus some more light on actually the first part, which I shared, which is anger actually signals also that there is also something that is crucial for me, that is really, really so important that my body-mind system is really entering a state of reactivity that John was referring in the beginning about the fight or flight reactivity. So there is something that I am actually perceiving as unsafe somehow. So if we go back to, you know, the wanting, the safety and well-being, and therefore my brain has a reaction to it. So basically NVC is inviting me with all those pieces to look deeper into the nature of anger. So anger, first of all, obviously is a feeling also, okay, is a feeling that we experience in our body and in our emotional body. So it points to something not being met. What I would like to share here, which I find relevant, is that I learned that feelings have usually a 90-second cycle. And then, you know, we move on to a different feeling. So anger actually usually is a feeling that we perceive for quite some time. And that is, in my estimation, because then we are following a train of thought. So we are actually feeding an initial reaction of ours with more thinking. And so we are actually feeding more anger into our body-mind system. Some ways we protect ourselves from really looking at the anger is, so some of the defense mechanisms that we can have and find in ourselves is that I can try to, you know, really express my anger with a fight reaction. So basically, you know, I really express all my intensity. And that also actually distracts me and prevents me to looking at what is painful in me. So it is a defense mechanism. Or else I could actually somehow, you know, pretend that I'm not angry, or somehow deny that I'm angry and projecting my anger towards you. So you are the one who is angry, not me. Or else I could, yes, recognize that I'm angry, but, you know, it's your fault because you are making me angry. So those are three of the ways our brain is trying to defend itself from looking into what is actually happening inside and what is painful right now in the moment. NVC is offering a different route, a different way of looking at ourselves when we experience this anger. And so it shares that feelings are triggered and not caused by others. It invites me to really taking responsibility for my own feelings, whatever the feelings are, and that is also for anger. So what you are doing may be a triggering, but not the cause of my feeling anger. And feelings point to needs. And part of the feelings we experience point to needs, but part of it is also the assessment that we have about needs. So if we assess our needs as being met, then obviously we have certain feelings. And when we assess our needs as not being met, then we have different feelings. Usually with the anger, there is an assessment that our needs are not met. And usually there is also a projection of the intentions of the other person, which in reality we really have no access to. So a question that I have found useful asking myself is, what am I telling myself? So when I'm angry and I'm able to recognize it, just asking myself, what am I telling myself, and see where that leads me. And, you know, look a little bit at my thinking. Another piece that I would like to share is focus a little more about on difficult emotions.
Stephanie, before you go there, I just want to recap what you said about the three different ways of dealing with anger. Recap
okay.
It. So one is, I might get angry because I'm hurt and I don't want to feel the hurt, so I get angry. That was one.
Yes, kind of a defensive mechanism.
As a defense against the feeling hurt or the feeling, maybe even feeling scared, but as a defense against feeling something more vulnerable.
Exactly. And something that I might actually, again, unconsciously assess as being too disruptive for me to even look at. I may not be able to hold it, you know, and so it's better to just remove myself from that. Yes.
And that to me sounds like the second one, like to deny anger, like that I'm angry, but I'm denying it. I'm not letting myself experience it or be conscious of it because I'm telling myself it's not okay somehow.
Yeah.
Is that the second one? So we kind of deny.
For me, the second one was in relationship. So I am actually saying that you are the one who is angry and I'm not angry. So I deny my own anger and
project it. Right. Oh, yeah. That one. Yeah. That's what I think I might do. So that I say, it's not me, that you're angry. So I experience the anger, but I experience it in you and not in me. In somebody else, somebody outside of me instead of in me.
Exactly.
So
you are the one with the problem, basically.
Right. And what was the third one then?
I take responsibility for my anger, but I blame you for making me angry.
But I blame you, yes. So I'm angry.
So it's you.
But
makes,
I blame
who
you
angry.
Who makes me angry. Okay. Okay, God, I like seeing that spectrum or those different ways of relating to it. Okay. And I had some thoughts about anger, too, that are a little bit more overview-ish, but would you like to finish your train where you were going with...
No, please. I'm eager to hear what you want to share.
Yeah, I'm kind of curious if I'll overhear myself saying something that I like. I'm borrowing that phrase from this poet, David White. I bet some of you know about David White, one of my heroes. Overhear myself saying something. Yeah, so anger for me, I have spent a lot of time around Marshall, and the way he talks about anger, as you were saying, that he focuses a lot on our thinking that creates the anger. So we think in a judgmental way, and then we get angry because we're thinking that way. And, of course, I experienced a lot of that in my own personal experience, the truth of that. But there seems to be, you know, Stephanie, in terms of the way we're organizing this class around brain science, that it's so compelling for me as well that anger is that part of the fight, of the fight, flight, and freeze, that's such a deep biological evolutionary response, you know, that it's coming out of millions of years of evolution to protect us, to keep us safe, that to fight when we perceive any kind of threat for our survival, then one very powerful response is to fight and to be angry. At least that's how I see the connection. And I just it makes it much easier for me that way to just see anger as this really natural positive thing. And it does, it is really successful in a certain sense of just creating a lot of separation from whatever we're feeling anger in relation to, and, you know, getting ourselves maybe into some just physically safer. The problem is that in terms of relationship and being in a family or community or society, you know, it's the strategies can be very damaging at the same time. But there's something about that I'm enjoying with this brain science and kind of biological perspective of seeing anger in that just very utilitarian way, that it's really there to serve us and to help us. And that sometimes in doing the work on ourselves, for me, it's not about turning the anger into something else. And it often can, if I really connect to the needs behind the anger, then often it's a big shift. I'm not feeling angry anymore. I'm feeling sad or scared. But there's also something about just the energy of if I can at least get connected to my needs, I might still have a lot of that energy and intensity in me, but it's coming out of trying to serve the needs that I'm conscious of. And I think some people have the experience with the NVC work that it sort of dilutes or diminishes the aliveness that we can feel, or the, you know, really being able to express our truth and our passion. And sometimes saying things that have some of that edge of intensity and anger to it really does have a powerful impact on people in a positive way. So I just want to, that's to me kind of filling out the whole picture of anger. And, but yeah, I've certainly experienced it in ways that lots of harm and hurt has come from it. But that I guess I see it a lot more than just shifting our thinking, that's a big part of it, but also just about getting unhooked, shifting that response that you talked about, getting dysregulated, that it's a brain state, it's a nervous system change and chemistry change, and actually needing to shift that out of that fight-flight reaction, and that once we shift out of that, the thinking isn't the same as well. So like they both, the thinking impacts it, but also impacting that body state also affects our thinking, I think, as well.
Absolutely. Yes. Thank you for sharing that. Yes. I guess it's like, you know, the egg and the chicken. I mean, you don't know what starts first. So the thinking obviously creates reactions in the brain, and a certain brain state creates more thinking, though, in a certain direction. So, yes. Isis, you have your hand raised?
One of the things I really like about anger, a part that I like about the brain chemistry, is that it creates energy in me. I find that as I age, I have less energy, but when I'm angry, I'm motivated. I'm motivated to take action. It feels effortless, like there's wings on my feet. I have a drive to action. If I didn't feel something that powerful, I might just lie all in bed all day feeling apathetic, or I might just sit and ruminate. But the anger is very empowering because it actually gives me the energy that I need to take, the action that I need to take, to get my needs met. And I love that feeling of energy that I get from anger.
Yeah, energy, power.
Yeah. Thank you. I like how you're sharing that. Yes. It's really connecting with this energy. And then, as John was saying, to channel it in a way that is life-giving. So when I express myself, do so in a way that also is compassionate towards myself and others, so that it creates more connection rather than disconnection and pain.
Yeah, I wanted to appreciate, thank you for saying that, because I just moments before you said that, I thought I'd really like to hear some examples of how anger can be positive, because I feel it so negative. And so thank you. That was a great example of, how, you know, anger can be powerful and it can really motivate us. So thank you for that reminder.
Thank you both. Okay, so there are a couple of pieces that I wanted to share with all of you, and then I will, John, lead us into a self-connection practice. So a couple of things about difficult emotions. So you might have encountered the concept that, you know, there are no positive or negative emotions. Emotions provide us with feedback about what is happening inside. I borrowed, actually, in one of the slides, the concept of the GPS, which I want to give credit to, you know, the person I first heard talk about feelings in that way, which is Kelly Bryson, certified trainer from California. So emotions basically just provide us with feedback of what is happening inside ourselves. So emotions are actually energy in motion. And so there is no emotion that is inherently destructive. My best understanding is that emotions become destructive in a way, so we can say, you know, disconnected from life and not serving life, and so they create mental and physical suffering when we are actually resisting them or clinging to them. So in the case of, well, anger, it could be both. I can cling to my anger, you know, my righteous anger, or I can try to resist it. Anger is bad. I shouldn't be angry. And so I resist it. And by resisting it, I'm actually feeding it. What resists persists. You might have heard this. But yes, emotions are not inherently destructive. So it's what I do with it. So how I enter in relationship with the emotion that I am feeling in the moment is what makes it, quotes, positive or negative. And then another piece that I found helpful to, you know, observing myself and learn is the spiraling of the difficult emotions. In my understanding, it all starts with a resistance. So maybe I'm feeling angry. I realize that I'm feeling angry, and then I tell myself that I don't like being angry. And then I may think that I wish I didn't have, you know, that anger right now in me. And then more thinking happens, and I go to, I actually should not be angry and have even this feeling of anger. And from there, then I spiral further down and I tell myself that I'm wrong for being angry. And then from being wrong to being bad, it's not a huge step. So I end up feeling anger and not accepting it and easily spiraling down into a sense of being wrong and being bad for experiencing that anger. So just being aware of that spiraling, I would like to see by a show of hands, if you resonate with this spiraling the way I shared it, if you can see yourself in that a little bit. Because for me, just being aware of this piece, everybody's raising their hand with a high five. Thank you very much. So that has been very helpful in actually interrupting the spiraling. And so when I see myself angry and I see the resistant and maybe I'm already in, I shouldn't be angry, I can take a pause, go through some steps that John will, go in depth momentarily, and therefore stop this spiraling and bring myself back into a state of more balance and groundedness. Yeah, John, I'm wondering if you would be willing to share your self-connection practice at this point.
I would. So I want to offer to you what in our mediation training we call self-connection practice. And we call it that instead of self-empathy practice. You probably heard that phrase in NVC training. I think of self-empathy as the verbal linguistic part of self-connection, where we basically connect to our needs and name the needs. So we talk to ourselves. So what am I? I say to myself, what am I needing? What am I? And I try to focus in on the needs, and also maybe what am I thinking, and try to name my thoughts and name my feelings. But it's kind of verbal. It's using the verbal parts of our brain to get reconnected to ourselves and to calm our body's reaction. So there's that, the verbal self-empathy. But in studying different things for a while, I've actually particularly influenced by a body of work called Heart Math. Some of you may know Heart Math. HeartMath.org is the website, and they've done a lot of research using pretty simple processes that are not particularly verbal linguistic. They're more how you focus your attention, awareness, like awareness of breath and focusing on the heart and the body. And as I read other things related to self-connection, it just seemed like that a lot of places I was seeing the importance of breath. And that in meditative traditions, it's almost universal. In any meditative tradition, the breath is at least one of the key ways to meditate. And lots of research showing that awareness of breath and breathing in different ways really affects calming and soothing the nervous system. So breath, and then the body, and focusing on the body and really being connected to the body seemed also to be really key. It's just more about awareness and focusing attention there in the body. So I talked about this idea of maps, that to have a map to me, or actually I want to also pair that with sometimes I get feedback from people in our programs that map is a very masculine term, and wanting also a feminine term as well, feminine energy term. So I'm thinking like relational matrix or something, that this idea of a map or a relational matrix that's about how to navigate through something so that I can just remember, oh, there's a sequence here. There's a way that one step relates to the next, and I can navigate through the storminess of intensity and conflict. So for self-connection, there's the map that we have is these three parts or three steps of breath and body and needs. And breath and body are, I think of as nonverbal self-connection practices or steps of the practice, and then the just naming needs as the verbal part. And I intentionally made it so that I think of it in terms of what's the simplest but most powerful process I could come up with that in the heat of the moment, whether I'm with somebody or I'm just, by myself, but I'm really triggered, then what's the first thing that I can do that starts bringing me back to connection, back to presence, back to having more choice about how I want to respond? So it just seemed to me the simplest but most complete would be breath, body, and needs, just naming needs. And then we have other processes where we go more deeply into the self-empathy part of thoughts and feelings and going deeper into the needs and things, the enemy image process that I'll be talking about next time. But in terms of self-connection practice, what I emphasize now, and I practice all the time with myself, is breath and body, and then just naming some needs, like right now, what needs am I meeting, am I wanting to meet in each moment, and just practicing being conscious of needs, awareness of needs, and naming needs. And because I think most of the time we go through our daily activities and we're not conscious of the need we're meeting or trying to meet, or when we're thinking what needs we're trying to meet. So I'll do this with you to lead you through a little practice, self-connection practice. So make yourself comfortable wherever you are. Close your eyes if you want to. Don't need to, because I like to think you can do it at any time, any place, eyes open or closed, driving a car, whatever, but to just practice self-connecting. So first, breath. Becoming aware of your breath. Going in and out. Just awareness of breath, experiencing the breath. Notice how that feels, just to do that, just that. I find as I put awareness on my breath naturally often starts to slow down a bit. And something I do to help that slowing down with the breath, and it really helps me a lot, and I learned it from the heart math work, is to count, and to count the same number of beats or counts in and out, in breath and out breath. And I usually use 5, but you can use whatever count is comfortable for you, 3 or 4 or 7, whatever. But the idea that you'd count the same number, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, in, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, out, and just help create that sense of rhythm, really a regular in breath and out breath. And that seems to really help me. So try that. Try breathing that way, see how it feels. So notice how that is for you. I notice I feel a lot more relaxed just focusing on my breath in this way. And then let's go to body. So that was breath and then body. And just focusing on the breath, it's hard not to start getting connected to the body already, because we're breathing into our body, obviously. But then I think really focusing, really kind of trying to, the way I think of it is dropping down from my kind of being in my thoughts, in my head, really dropping into my body and feeling the wholeness of my body. If you can just, that sense like you're really present in your body, experiencing yourself as a body, in your body. You could feel the aliveness of your, animating your body, the energy of your body, sensations are emotional, but just being, just feeling all that being in your body. Eckhart Tolle calls this the energy body, kind of feeling this energetic experience of your body and really being in the body. And continuing to be aware of breath also. Breathing in this rhythmic way, in and out, and really present in your body. Feeling your body. You can focus on different parts of the body that seems to be helpful. From my study, there's these three of the seven chakras, there are three places in the body that seem to be particularly helpful to focus on. The belly region, the hara, it's called in some Eastern traditions. The belly, the heart area, the chest, and the head region, the forehead between the eyes and the top of the head, that whole region of the head. So the head, the hara, heart. And to breathe, heart math has the breathing into the heart. So, and the heart is the largest energy system of the body, the beating of the heart, apparently. So, or you can also breathe into, if you have tension in your shoulders, or there are different relaxation ways to relax, muscle relaxation that you can breathe into muscles and relaxing muscles. So there's different ways you can use the breath and focusing in the body. And how about for right now? Maybe just breathing into the heart. Slow down, regular, same amount in and out. Breathing into the heart, through the heart, as if your heart is breathing. That. So notice how that is for you, to be aware of breath and body in that way. Your mind and your body respond to that. And then needs. So even though needs is such a core part of the NVC practice, it's easy to forget about, well, yeah, what am I needing? What am I needing? And so that it's just habitual more and more to just become conscious. What needs am I wanting to be aware of or kind to me right now? So just even sitting wherever you are doing this exercise with me, what are some needs that you'd enjoy having your attention on? Needs that you're meeting right now, need you're wanting to be meeting in your life at this time, or in any way you want to just feel good, to just say some needs. And it's just saying the words, but the words pointing to this something in us that responds when we name it. Just universal desires, things we all want as human beings, is all part of life, that we're all can kind of feel that being part of life. And by naming these things, that all life has needs, is meeting needs. Just say a couple needs to yourself. As you are still aware of breath and body. It's for well-being, love, or belonging. Your needs, just conscious, what needs are you aware of right now? Notice how that feels, just to name those needs as you with breath and body. And I often cycle through, so reminding myself again of breath, body, needs. It's kind of a mantra, breath, body, needs, that I use. It's like a friend now. It's one of my best friends. Anytime I start to feel some stress, some tension, I just remember breath. And then I smile. I'm like, that's right, yeah. And I just look forward to this, you know, my friend, the breath, and focusing on the body and the needs. And I find it very comforting and, like, I always have something I can just come back to when I feel panicky or the way that I'd like. So again, I see this as like sort of the most foundational practice for me. There are many other things to do beyond just self-connection practice to try to deal with situation. But I mean, this is the first place that I start. And I practice this every day throughout the day, and even set aside time, like a meditation time, to do this. But I try to do all these three parts because those are the parts I want to remember when I'm triggered. Because it's so easy to forget when we get triggered. We just get flooded with all that stuff, and then, you know, we're reacting. So the more we stress a lot in our training is practice. So practice, practice, practice throughout the day. And then practicing when we're not particularly triggered, so then when we are, we can have those neural pathways grooved to more easily go into this place of bringing ourselves back to self-connection. So, Stephanie, I think we're going to move into some intensity now. You would like to go straight to that, is that right?
Yeah, I would like to, before we move to the next piece, which would be meeting another person's intensity. The one piece that I would like to share in, you know, response to John's practice is that there have been many, 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 many studies in brain science through MRIs and, you know, research done that even strong emotions can be scaled back through body awareness and breathing. So those seem, you know, very simple tools, and at the same time, they are very, very powerful. So throughout this course, we will, you know, offer you several ways in which to bring yourself back into some self-regulation, some balance when, you know, you realize you are angry and would like to find again some spaciousness to then really, you know, relate to your anger in a productive way. So there are a couple of things that I would like to share around meeting the intensity of another person's anger, and in particular, our children. The first thing that I would like, you know, just to acknowledge that it can be particularly painful for a parent to face the intensity and the anger of one's own child or children. So just wanting to name that, and again, hold ourselves with some compassion around it when we find ourselves triggered by encountering our children's intense emotions. Yeah, I guess the only piece that I would like to share, just because I want to make space for the other exercise that John is wanting to share, the intensity practice, I touched upon it already before. So the idea is that usually we get all triggered with intensity and anger when we are feeling somehow endangered. So it might not be exactly what is happening, but this is how our brain is perceiving a situation, another person. And so there is this sense of feeling endangered. So our safety somehow is at stake. So this is our perception. And some of the ideas that I have found helpful, again, in meeting my own intensity and another person's intensity with some compassion, is to see actually fear as the soil on which anger can grow. And anger actually as a projection of fear. So concretely, when I am faced with my children's intensity or a person, you know, whom I am in relationship with, and I am so faced with their anger, it has been very, very helpful to me to actually reframe the situation. And rather than seeing the other person as angry, seeing the person as fearful. So basically, there has been this perception in the person. The person's brain has perceived a situation as unsafe. The amygdala has given the alarm. The fight or flight reaction has been awakened, and that is the state of the person's brain. So basically, it is really, I mean, I see it really as anger as a byproduct of a state of fear, which is the state the brain is in. And so looking at a person and saying, oh, this person is in fear, to me is supporting me in opening my heart towards that person rather than saying, oh, this person is angry. Because if I label that person as angry, that then triggers my own amygdala, because then I feel endangered somehow. My safety is at stake, and so we get both triggered. So making this, you know, reframing this shift from anger to fear has been very helpful. And that for me ties in what I think, John, you will be tackling with your intensity practice, and particularly the idea that, which was initially expressed by Marshall, that all we do is a please or a thank you. So when we are angry, it's actually a please. So the please is basically, I'm in fear, please help me. And so if we are able to, you know, reframe a situation either in terms of a please or in terms of fear, that, in my experience, has been very supportive in helping me stay or, you know, find again some open-heartedness. I am complete, John, so I am happy for you to go into the exercise or share something about the intensity practice and then go into the exercise.
Okay, I really like your reframe of anger to fear, Stephanie. I don't know that I've heard you use that one yet, and I really like that. I can see how that would be very helpful.
I just wanted to say that I really enjoyed that too, Stephanie, that reframing of anger. I think I've always kind of known on some level then when someone's angry, particularly children, that I haven't so much framed it as in they're fearful, but as in like they're needing help, basically. It's a cry for help. Mm-hmm. That has helped me in the past. Yeah, it is a great way to reframe it. I do find it allows you to be much more compassionate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, you were just saying a cry for help is, to me, what Stephanie was saying about the please or thank you, that Marshall is one of his famous sayings. You could choose to hear what anybody is saying as either a please or a thank you. Thank you, my needs are being met, and I'm judging positively because of that. Or please, yeah. I have a need I'd like to be met. That's why I'm judging in a bad, wrong way. So that, yeah, that if someone is saying, help, I need help, please, you know, and use that as a reframe, yeah.
Yeah, and to say, yeah, you know, you can say, please help me. I mean, especially a child, I have needs I need to meet here, and I have no idea how to meet them.
I have no idea how to meet them, right. And I'm frustrated and angry, yeah, I have no idea. Yeah. Thank you. Yes, so in terms of intensity practice, to do the exercise that I want to do with you when I'm not on the phone with people and I'm doing this exercise, I do it in pairs, but it's really hard to do on the phone with partners. So I'll lead you through an exercise where you can just do it with yourself as kind of an extension of the self-connection practice. It would help, though, to have something in mind to work with. And Stephanie, I think if we just gave people 3 minutes each way, 6 minutes total to be with each other and just talk about, find a situation that is triggering, maybe just debrief a little bit of what, Stephanie, you and I have been saying, and just to kind of, just to have a little break, talk about that, but in the context of finding something, a situation that triggers you, your children, something concrete to work with. For me to lead this next exercise with you.
So, welcome back into the main room. John, you have a mic.
So, I want to take you all now straight into an exercise, and then we'll have a little bit of time to hear from you about how the whole class has been. So, this is going to integrate the self-connection practice that I led you through earlier with an intensity, practicing with intensity. So just talking about that, a situation with your partner may have got you in touch with already starting to feel something in your body, just thinking about it. So, so whether you're feeling that or not in this moment, I just want to strengthen the self-connection practice. Become aware of your breath. If it helps to count in and out the same amount, to even out your breathing. And then drop into your body and feel your body, be in your body. There's intensity there in your body from what you were talking about. See if you can just be present to that intensity. It's not it away, it's not beating it, it's just allowing that intensity to be there in your body, feeling whatever's there in your body, breathing. aware of breath. It's this time breathing into your belly. See what that's like too. You breathe into your diaphragm and fill out your belly as you breathe. And needs. Say a few needs to yourself. And this time in relation to the situation. What needs? Peace and harmony? Is it for safety? Love and care? Whatever the words are. Universal things we all want. Say a few needs to yourself. And breathe into your body. So my hope is you feel some relaxation happening, some calming, some regulation, as Stephanie would say, your body becoming more and more regulated and centered, calm. And then the practice is then to intentionally have that response, that triggering response happens so you can catch it really early, the practice of catching it early. So it's sort of this sensitivity, this awareness of when we're getting triggered and how does that feel, and then the practice of coming back, presence and connection. So if you think of the situation, talk with your partner about, thinking about it until you can just start to feel the reaction in your body. Noticing, is it a flight reaction? Is it wanting to run away? Is it fear? Or is it a fight reaction, getting angry and wanting to somehow fight in some way as a protective mechanism? Perhaps freeze, just kind of a freezing response. Can you tell the difference? And can you notice which one tend to do or that at least is in this situation for you? So it's catching the reaction, and now go back to self-connection. Breath, body, needs. Breath, body, needs. To go back to that and do that. Cycling through breath, body needs to get in thoughts, but it's a way to come back. Okay. Now if you feel some calm happening there, go back to thinking of the situation again. Until you notice the trigger, the reaction in your body. You feel it, go back to self-connection. And in that self-connection, it's just being able to be with intensity, tolerating intensity, until it shifts, until it fades. Not needing to keep reacting to reactions, but being with it, holding it, holding that intensity in a way that with it, breath, body, it's. And notice that goal for me, it isn't to go deeply into understanding or getting to the bottom of what's going on. Just this step. The other processes are, but this one, first, for me, the first step, the first map I want to use is just to get some self-connection happening, some regulation happening. There's a way to practice it. So you can add this if you want to daily self-connection practice, to add in this intensity practice to it. And one other thing you can do is in the moment when you are experiencing a situation that is triggering for you, you can, by framing it, I frame it to myself, at least in a good moment, as, oh, this is intensity practice right now. It's happening. And I'm feeling intensity. This person, I'm experiencing their intensity, and then I'm experiencing my intensity. And this, oh, this is intensity practice. Can I practice coming back to self-connection, breath, body needs, right now in the moment? You may or may not be able to, so it might be after the moment that you're doing it, but the more we practice, I think, the more it can be, we can stay conscious in the actual situation itself. A couple different ways to use this idea of an intensity practice to go with self-connection practice. So how about we just open it up to any comments or questions about what I just did with you, intensity practice and or the self-connection, and then just maybe anything about class as a whole. And by the way, I ask for this because I find it's feedback for Stephanie and I how it's going, but it's also a chance for you to, by speaking out into the group, you can deepen some learning for you or something that's important to you. And you sharing it, often that's a big learning or gift to somebody else, others who hear it. So that's why we often will stop and ask if you have anything you want to share for those at least three reasons. So anybody want to say anything before we go?
I'm really, part of me is excited about that practice. I think it's going to be enormously powerful, actually, for me. I love the way that you get yourself connected, self-connected, calm space, go back to the incident, feel the intensity, and as you feel the intensity, then come back and self-connect. I think that's just that kind of backwards and forwards. I just thought was really quite powerful, actually. The interesting thing was for me, in that exercise, after you started the practice, I actually had tears and actually feel really sad. I don't really know where it's coming from or why or whatever, but so I was just kind of being with that, and I suppose it was part of me trying to make sense of it a little bit. But
so that's something about it, some intensity around sadness and feeling the sadness coming up. Yeah, yeah.
Well, it was more in the context of why am I feeling sad in conjunction with this particular incident, which is usually triggers my children.
Mm-hmm.
So there's, you know, exploration
Sadness related to that, yeah.
Yeah. So I want to say thank you because, I think for me, you know, doing something at a body level is really helpful and a really useful way for me to connect, I find. Much better than the thoughts and the brain and all that logic and stuff. I just find it's a better way for me. So thank you.
I'm so glad. Thank you.
I had some insights that I just felt really connected to my situation, which was where I feel really overwhelmed and understanding that the fear that comes up, and I think I'm getting that my thinking around that is that there's not enough, you know, there's not enough resources and maybe, you know, it's sort of time or energy. And so I guess I'm telling myself that there's not enough. And it just found it really interesting that if this is really an activation of a kind of reptilian brain, something that is actually a life-threatening situation if you're a reptile.
Yeah.
And the triggering of anger in that just tied in to, I think, was it anger giving the energy to empower and to take action? And, you know, without that action, then you couldn't go and find more resources. You couldn't go and find where that is. So given that actually I don't need more resources because I really probably have everything I need right inside of me, that bringing it back and the soothing the intensity to tell myself that there actually is enough. That's really, that's been really beautiful to help me understand that. So thank you.
Thank you.
Glad to hear that.
Okay, do you want to say anything in closing,
Stephanie? Yeah, just
Stephanie?
A quick thing. You have a few tools already to get you started in trying to find some balance again, some regulation when finding yourself triggered, and some ideas to play with. So it's our invitation to try and use them, and so maybe next week you can tell us what you have found most helpful. I am complete, John. anything on your part.
I just want to actually make the request that you practice self-connection and intensity at least once a day while we're in the class together. So if you're willing to set aside the time and maybe try to do it throughout the day, but at least set aside one time a day to do some self-connection practice and add in some intensity practice if you'd like. All right. Take care, everyone.
Thank you. Bye-bye, everybody.